Could you start by telling me about the changes you have observed in weather and land use patterns in the past 5 to 10 years in the Himalayas, or basically where Himalayan Hut is based?
So the biggest thing has been that rains have been extremely unpredictable. And by unpredictable, I don't just mean heavy like we had this year, which made the news, but also either not in time or very low or very heavy. And that is, of course, as an agro business and a farm, it kind of brings its own set of challenges. So that is the one thing, because the lessons that you learn from 1 year, you can try and apply it, and hopefully the second year will be similar to, the year, but that just, you're kind of taking the lessons from, but it may or may not be really the case. So if you change your like planting times and things, you might have some success, but you might also, it just might backfire as well. So yeah, the biggest thing has been unseasonal rains, and generally overall it's been, lesser rain. Except for, of course, this year was like a very heavy monsoon kind of thing. And yeah, and in terms of that, I think the thing that mainly gets affected is, your crops. So for us, and what we've noticed, it somehow, like fruit trees, it's not so bad. Like, you might have less produce or an abundance 1 year and a lack 1 year or something, so the size might be small or something like that. But like there is this total decimation of crops. I find that the fruit trees are, it's kind of are safe from that. So what I find is a lot of people focusing on, in our case, like Malta and citrus, which are more resilient. And generally, the other thing that's happened is like people aren't farming that much anymore, because it's just too risky, and it's, not the ROI, as you can say, is very low. So rather the people, like you, the people are looking for alternative sources of income, like, whether they're going as labor and working, or they're, setting up some small sort of enterprise or working in a shop. So that's happening a lot. So labor also is, you don't find a lot of people actually willing to work on farms or on their own farm, on their own land holding.
And when it comes to unpredictable rainfall, could you maybe give me some examples of how you've shifted planting cycles? Especially, I think you were mentioning chamomile the last time we spoke.
Right.
So, yeah.
So the year before last, we had an abundance of chamomile, actually. The year before last. So we were like, you know what, we've just, we've overstretched, and at the end we couldn't even like cope up. So the last year we didn't plant as much. And because for something like chamomile, like you plant it in winter, and then in spring, because it's flowers, that's when it's ready for picking. And typically you can pick like two or three times, maybe three times. So, you kind of do one lot of pickings, all done manually. Second, then again in some time, but they'll bloom, and then again, like at least three pickings. But what happened this year is we had early rains, I think April rains. So the flowers, of course, first of all, they somehow also absorb moisture, and then they couldn't dry well. So we lost so much of our chamomile. They just kind of, they're supposed to be these whole flowers, and they become like powdery and discolored. So a lot of it was unusable. So what we're doing this year, in fact, we're doing it currently, this is the season, we thought that we would do a larger, again, in fact, we're also giving some chamomile to a few people to plant for us. We're doing a larger quantity of sowing. And the idea is that, because the initial ones, the early March, you still have that window to, collect. So if we can get a lot of it, do a the put the major effort initially to try and beat the rains, and so, and then if you miss the last bits, because they also grow smaller in size with time. So if you miss the last picking or something, then we can kind of live with it. So that's the strategy we're trying this way. But we've had to kind of change our approach that way,
Got it. So you're planting right now.
Yeah. Which is
Typically,
normal, which is usual. Which is, so usually what happens is, in fact, we might be a bit late, because as soon as your rains finish, So in September you plant, it's called a bijwar or the nursery. You know, you plant, and then once it grows, little plants are kind of, you know, healthy, and then you put them into the fields, into their permanent. So yeah, I think we're about okay. Like December is when that happens, and then March is when, you know, the flowers start.
Got it. And are there any other non-perennials for which you've, shifted planting
Yes.
cycles?
Yeah. So the thing with the hills, the challenge with the hills is that because in other places, like especially warmer areas, you could somehow, you know, even do two different seasons of certain things. Like even chamomile, I believe that there's, you know, there's spring and also now. I don't know how they do it because but our weather is so, you know, like winters are so terrible and rains are so heavy, and you know, it's such a short window really. Like even tomatoes, we just can do one a year, one crop a year.
Oh,
It's
wow.
not like this, that something you keep doing because it's too cold. I'm not talking about poly houses and things, you know, the kind of farming we do is just 100% natural, relying on you know, sort of natural seasons and all of that. So for our, so tomatoes is the other thing that we had a big loss with last year, because we, I am not kidding, you did not even get one a single piece of tomato from our fields, not even one. It was just it was quite sad. So this time we are going to try different kind of varieties of tomatoes, eh, and also try a bit earlier to see if we can beat that heavy June, July window, because tomatoes are something which is very, it doesn't like water, so you know, and the yeah, one of those things. So we're going
That
to try that
sounds sad.
different variety. I know it was, it's, and the amount of the effort, because you know, we don't, so we do these like sticks which, you know, we collect, and you prune these when you prune like trees, we collect these sticks, and that's used, and it's a whole apparatus, and we put like you know, for scarecrows you make these little like bags on sticks and all of that, and it's just like it was just like really bad. So I had to like source to find another farmer, and at least you know, we managed that. But so we're gonna try this time different varieties and see which is, you know, may do better.
Hopefully that works out. So these varieties that you're trying with right now, they are also native varieties only, just like a different.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is about tomatoes. See, everyone usually does. We do an heirloom because we do sauce with it. So we do San Marzano, typically heirloom tomatoes. But this, and they usually do well. So with that, I'm gonna just try a few other similar. I haven't really zeroed down on it, but yeah, let's see.
Got it. Okay. And also the last time we spoke, you were telling me a little bit about the cafe you have and how
Yes.
you're trying to sort of use the produce from the fields for the cafe as well. So could you maybe tell me a little bit more about how you focus on mitigation when it comes to climate crisis in the context of agrotourism and how you've adapted to it?
I think the key thing is, again, you know, we've learned that you have to have, you can't rely so heavily on like one crop or like one season's offering. So like this season can, you know, so many things were affected in this window, right? So yeah, so Forest Farm Kitchen is basically an extension of Himalayan Hut in a way, and it kind of you know, sinks in with our whole idea of providing jobs. And of course Himalayan Hut is all women run, and you know, we've trained village ladies and that, but the Forest Farm is more, it's young people, so it's a lot of youth, and just providing skills that even if they move out, if they want to, because you know, young people often want to, you know, kind of see more, get out there and so, and they always have skills to like work with, right? So yeah, the idea is we use a lot of stuff from Himalayan Hearts, our products on the menu. For example, our coolers, it's on the menu. We are herbal infusions are there. We use things like our, you know, our chili sauce as condiments, as a dipping sauce on the side. And then yes, we grow all our own herbs and even veggies. And for Forest Farm, what we're trying to do is people around us, because you know, it's so interesting, like with the hills and the terrain and the slope and whether you're north facing, or there's so many things. So you know, one patch gets good sun, but the other is slightly in the valley, so there's no sun. Like even where we are, so Himalayan Heart gets, it's like 50 meters. Himalayan has like a sunny spot and like forest farm, because it's in like the Gadera, we call it. It's like cold and there's like no sun. So all of these small little nuances and factors play a role. So what we've done, because the terrain of the mountains is such, you know, like where the sun is coming through or not getting in, what we're doing is we've actually spoken to like farmers around us. So, you know, it's for some things that we need, like broccoli and carrots and stuff that we really can't grow here because of the fact that it's too cold, or these are winter veggies that you don't have the sun. So that kind of sort of collaboration also that we can do. And one more thing I want to just add to that, like what Himalayan Heart is, what we're looking at now, because we've realized that we can't just, I mean, we want the farm is basically, we talk a lot about stewardship and just, you know, like using it well. So the whole thing with agro-tourism is the idea that we know the farm is used to, you know, it's good for people, it's good for the planet, that kind of thinking. For example, we just got some goats. It's very exciting, actually. I mean, and you know, can we kind of building like maybe in the future a little farm stay and more like educational visits, or an experiential visit. So we'll, so if people come, they actually can, you know, engage with these animals and engage with like stuff from, yeah, the fields and harvest, which is, I think most farms are going that way. It just makes, it's like, because you can, you have to diversify, so you don't rely only on you know, your crops and that. So
Yeah, that makes sense. It also sounds really exciting. Great. I can't, like, we've been thinking about this. We've been talking to a bunch of organizations and producers as well. And the effect of a more hands-on experience and a more you know, something that's more tangible that people can experience, it really helps in understanding the gravity of the situation. So this sounds like a great idea. And congrats on the goats.
I know they all have names, and we got these gaddi ke, you know, gaddi ke bakri are basically a Himalayan breed. They're like the long-haired ones, and everyone was like, you know what, they wouldn't, nahi hoga, you know, it's very, they need, because they just graze. They don't eat like roti and grains and stuff, which is a usual, but we just, because we have the, we have like a forest, we have the area, and we want to just use it. My whole thing is I want to use the farm well, you know, like if I have this chari somewhere and there are goats to eat it, great, you know, this forest has place to graze. So we've got like, we've also got some like local, they actually, they call just ghar ki bakri, but they like, I think they probably like some desi, I don't know, some desi, desi means like from the plain, some sort of thing, you know, down the
Got
line.
it.
We'll
So they
see
help
what works.
with pollination.
No, they actually, we need them for manure desperately.
Got it.
So goats, it's great because, you know, they also help with kind of managing your see, there's a lot of jhari and bushes, and you know, you want to, so you get your goats and they eat a lot of that to keep it looking neat. But their main thing is the manure. It's really good and you need it for an organic farm. So, and then maybe if we have goat milk, I don't know, in the future we can, you know, try
The
something.
potential product for sure.
Yeah. I don't think we'll have enough. They're really, they're not, but you know, just for like if people are visiting and stuff, they can try. And
Sounds
then maybe.
really exciting. We spoke about how you've started relying on farmers in the region more, like you mentioned currently as well. So how has that helped? Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's the collaboration is very key, because it means that we are not so reliant on our own farms, you know, success or failure. And like as I said, every like just today we had this farmer come in with his lot of maltas, and they are ready sooner than us because he has more sun and he's further, little, you know, like a kilometer or 500 meters further down from us. And you know, so it's great. Yeah, so just making these connections, and I know, is fantastic. It just means that it also eases the pressure on resources. For example, we can then focus on things that not everybody can grow or which are more like specialized. For example, we grow all our own herbs because herbs need to be handled very delicately. You know, they can't just be like out, you know, sunning all day, or they can't be, you know, they're so delicate and they have to be picked in the morning or the evenings. So that stuff we do ourselves. So we're able to use our resource or say our fields for specific things. And the things which are more general, of course, we grow all of our ingredients actually. So there's, I mean, in different quantities, but then we're able to then focus on the strawberries. We grow all our own strawberries. We don't source from anybody because, again, this is whole thing about organically growing strawberries is really tough. And also, it's a summer fruit for us. It's not like, you know, elsewhere, which is now. And it's so highly perishable and transport and all of that. So we're going to focus on strawberries, on chamomile, on chia, on walnuts, you know, these kind of things. And what else? Some of the, yeah, the ginger, haldi, though we do anyway. But yeah, that and the tomatoes as well, the heirloom tomatoes. So we can focus on that and, you know, collaborate on the more sort of local, easily available items that we're also growing, but we're also able to then supplement from other farmers.
That makes sense. And in terms of you know, from say a policy or an institutional standpoint, apart from what you already do you what is something else that you imagine could support smallholder farmers?
See, I think one of the challenges for all of us mountain farmers is always transport. You know, in fact, transport is so ridiculously expensive. It's so expensive. So, you know, whether you're sending out fruit, like for see, when there's an abundance, you know, that there is, like, for example, Malta is something which is in abundant in Uttarakhand generally. And it's something, so there's also like other farmer groups that are trying to, and you know, promote it. But you have to create a demand. Now, the demand is out there, you know, the demand's in Delhi or Dehradun. But the transport and all of that logistics, it's really tough and it's hard to expect farmers to be able to pull it off, you know. So that's sort of some sort of support there is key. And yeah, I find that even for me, that's challenging. For us is more like the raw materials that we get. Raw materials in the sense I'm talking about bottles and like that kind of stuff we don't find here, right? So expensive. It's like 25% of our costs of yeah, the actual materials is 25% is easily that we be on transport just to get it up here.
Oh wow, that's a lot, and I can't even
That's a lot.
imagine.
That's a lot.
For smallholder farmers, especially to
Yeah.
then spend
Yeah.
that much.
So more collaboration, and I think market linkages, that, you know, creating market linkages, because, you know, I often find that it's easy to distribute seeds or give plants. Now, how, that's just the first thing, or, you know, teach someone how to make something. But but to enable them to like actually sell it, you know, I think from a policy point of view, or like create a market for that, or create the linkages. So yeah, because they do, I mean, you can get like the horticulture department's great, you get your seeds, you get a lot of subsidized, you know, plants and all of that. But then, you know, yeah, after that you kind of left.
Yeah, the follow through is
Yes.
understood.
Yeah.
This is a little bit of a difficult question because I know the terrain is rough, and you know, year on year, the weather and the climate changes. But in terms of the future and say 5 years, 10 years down the line, do you think there's something that Himalayan Heart on its own, not on its own, but Himalayan Heart and the smallholder farmers that you guys work with, is there something specific that you think that you can adopt or ways in which you can adapt to sort of think about the future in that way when it comes to climate change? Are there any solutions, so to say, that come to mind?
I mean, see, the biggest thing in the hills, at least, is, you know, like the forest fires is a huge, very direct kind of thing that we see. It's linked, you know, just to the, yeah. I think that's a really obvious one because, and it's linked to, and we say this often, you know, Himalayan talks about it a lot. It's about the pine trees that are invasive and that take over, you know, like kilometers of mountain land, and because they don't retain water, water runs off, as opposed to like oak, where, you know, like we are based, and you know, the oak plantation that we've done, we have water through the year. We supply water to villages, you know, because of the kind of plantation. So that's kind of the base of it. You know, what I'm going to say is, I think it would be great if there would be, you know, a way to kind of replace some of the pine with oak and more indigenous kafal and chestnut, which also hold water. And some of that problem of water shortage in the hills would be solved through that.